to, you know, until now what I've been talking about is, what does it mean to talk about Hashem? And definitely what we certainly don't mean when we say Hashem. And now we're going to begin our journey towards, with the appreciation of limitation of words, we're going to begin to journey into what does it mean, what do we mean when we say Hashem, and more important, what do we experience when we say Hashem? Okay? As I mentioned to you many times, the meaning of a word is the experience that the word is connected to. So you could ask a person, do you like chocolate? And they say, no. And you say, well, are you sure? And they say, absolutely. And you say, well, I don't know if you notice this, but that's what you're eating right now. And the guy goes, no way. I love this stuff. You mean I've been eating chocolate all along? Yeah. Oh, okay. So same thing, as we get more developed, we'll understand that the word Hashem, or Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, is really only noise. It's just noise. And until it correlates to a very real experience, it stays noise. And so if we talk about chocolate, but you've never tasted chocolate, then the word is meaningless. And so too, the word God is essentially, or Hashem, is meaningless unless someone has helped you correlate experientially what that's referring to. So the beginning of the journey to, so to speak, understanding what we mean when we say Hashem is to first deal with what we mean when we say you, right? So I want to talk about today and probably even tomorrow, who are you? And then we're going to go backwards to understanding who is Hashem, all right? And what I'm about to share with you is probably one of the most important things I could share with you this entire year. Because this is the secret to everything in your life. Happiness, meaning, creativity, healthy relationships, genuine love, all that is predicated on what I'm about to share with you. Because literally the most important issue that you need to get clear on is who are you? Because the secret to everything in your life is you. If you can get in touch with yourself, if you can be the real you, then you can drive yourself to where you want to be getting to. But if you're not in touch with yourself, and what this talk and tomorrow's talk is going to address is really, literally, the most fatal question of your life. And the way you answer this question will literally impact your entire life. And what is that question? What is the source of your unconditional self-worth? That's the question. We're all asking that question. We might not know we're asking that question, but everybody wants to feel good about themselves. Right? Everybody wants a sense of worthwhileness, if there's such a word. They want to feel valued. They want to feel significant. And if you don't feel valuable, and if you don't feel significant, you don't feel good about yourself, then everything will flow from there. We all know the mitzvah, love your neighbor as yourself. Well, I know lots of people that I'd really prefer them to not love me as they love themselves. I hope they'll love me better than the way they love themselves, and hope they'll treat me better than they treat themselves. And very often, unfortunately, relationships break down not because your spouse doesn't love you, but because you don't love you. And you're not even able to receive the love of your spouse. And they could be telling you over and over, I love you, but you just don't believe it. So those words just fall on deaf ears. So really what I want to talk about is you. And I want you to understand that all year long, I'm just going to be talking about you. Because the only reason we talk about Hashem is because it helps us understand who we are. If we're talking about Hashem just from a purely philosophical point of view, where we're just philosophically curious, then you shouldn't be talking about Hashem. Right? The only things we're going to say about Hashem is that which is relative and relevant to who we are and why we are and why we've come to this world and what we need to do. Anything beyond that is a sewer. You shouldn't be talking about God. So really, we really talk about God because we're trying to understand ourselves and why we are here and what we are here to be doing. And anything beyond that, that kind of philosophical curiosity is not right and is anyways going to be wrong. Because no matter what you say about God, is ultimately wrong because we can't fit God into boxes. So then why are we talking about him at all? The only reason we're talking about God is to make sense of our sense of who we are and why we're here. Okay? We have a sense of who we are, and we have a sense of why we're here, but we might not have properly or sufficiently articulated that and are not therefore very much in touch with that. Okay? So here we begin. So who are you? Right? So who are you? So a number of years ago, one of my students from our summer program, you know, we run these summer programs, which is co-ed and predominantly for people who are not from religious backgrounds. So there was a woman in our program, and I invited her for Friday night dinner, for Shabbat dinner at her home. And we were talking, and she had mentioned in passing that her mother was in Japan. So I asked her, well, what's your mother doing in Japan? And she said, oh, my mom, she's looking for herself. All right, you know, makes sense. You know, if you're Jewish, that's probably where you're going to go looking for yourself is Japan. Most Jews don't come to Israel looking for themselves. And, okay, well, my daughter, who at the time was, you know, a little girl, and my kids, they understand English somewhat, you know, some more than others, but they didn't speak English because we didn't speak English that much at the home, and they very much wanted to be Israelis, my kids. So my daughter, she has this very confused look on her face, and she turns to me and she says, Abba, Mayamra, Daddy, what did she say? She couldn't understand what this woman just said. So I now take this very familiar phrase, and I say, well, Ima Shala, her mother, Hiba Yapan, she's in Japan, and she's looking for herself. And at that moment, my daughter, her eyes grew wide. And she went like this, whoa. And I got inside her head for a second. I said, this is really scary. I mean, this is really scary. The mother is in Japan looking for herself. How do you lose yourself? You know, and she's trying to figure out, like, you could lose yourself? You know, how do you do that? And so I thought, yeah, that's really crazy. Imagine the mother's in a hotel. She checks out. As she's walking out of the hotel, she says, myself. Where is myself? I could have swore I had myself. Whoa. You know? I mean, the last time I saw myself was in the bathroom mirror. Maybe I'm still there. Runs back to the receptionist. Excuse me, but I think I left myself in the room. Oh, we're sorry, ma'am. The room's being cleaned out. No, that's not possible. I mean, well, we do have a lost and found, but that'll be open tomorrow morning. Where did you, how did you, what does it mean to lose yourself? But the mother lost herself, and she's looking for herself. So I want to understand, what's the self? Who's the self? And based on that, we can begin to understand, what is the source of unconditional self-worth? Okay? And believe me, that is the most important question you must get answered in your life. So what I want to talk about is I call this me, myself, and I. Me, myself, and I. Who's the me? Who's the self? Who's the I? Okay? So the first thing I want you to know, and this is rooted in our Sod sources, the mystical sources. And we're going to look at some of these sources. So today, we're not doing sources. Almost all year long, we're just going to read sources, sources, sources. But I'm going to give you the big picture, and then we're going to look at some of the sources that substantiate what I just said. The first thing I want you to know is the self is the soul. Right? You do not have a soul. That's a mistake. You are a soul. I, soul, am talking to you, soul. You're a soul. Now, we talk about my soul, my body, but that's very misleading because it seems to suggest there's a self, an I, that has a soul. The I doesn't have a soul. The I is soul, right? So that sense of I consciousness, that sense of awareness, that pure field of awareness, that experience that you have when you say I, that's soul talking, okay? You have a body, but you are a soul, okay? Just as it's inappropriate to say myself. You don't have a self. You are a self. But it's just the way we talk. So we just have to understand that sometimes we say things that could be somewhat a little bit misleading because that's just the way we talk. Just like, it's raining. What's raining? It's raining, right? Our language doesn't always quite communicate clearly because there isn't an it's that's raining. Raining is raining, but because in our vocabulary you have to have a noun and a verb, but here it's supposed to be the noun and the raining is the verb, but it's just verbing right now. There's no noun, okay? Same thing. In our language, we say things and we formulate sentences that sometimes can be confusing. So the first thing you should know is you are a neshama. You don't have a neshama. You are a neshama, okay? And you as a neshama come in this world to play a character. Just like an actor plays a character, you play a character. You see, I'm playing a character named David Aaron. Short, red-headed character, born to a Holocaust survivor, right? Landed in Toronto, and that's the character I play. But David Aaron is not who I am. David Aaron is a character I play, okay? Just like an actor plays a character, you are a soul, and you've been given a character to play. And everything that you describe about yourself isn't about yourself at all. It's about your character. The self is indescribable. The self is indescribable. Just like the various colors of consciousness are indescribable. For instance, what does seeing look like? What color is seeing? What shape is seeing? What's the texture of seeing? Seeing is one of the colors of awareness, and it can't be described by anything it's aware of. What does hearing sound like? What does taste taste like? What does smell smell like? These are all the, so to speak, the aspects of the self-awareness. And yet they cannot be described. They're the power that describes but cannot be described. So even though seeing enables you to see colors, texture, and shape, but seeing cannot be described by color, texture, or shape, it's indescribable, the power of seeing. So then how do you know you're seeing? It's an experience, okay? So too, the self is pure awareness. And then there's facets of that awareness, seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, okay? But it's indescribable. Everything you describe about yourself, your intelligence, your emotional makeup, your physical looks, your financial status, your talents, those are your character, okay? That all belongs to the character that you play. I'll give you an example. How many of you can honestly say that you're not the same person today that you were 5 years ago, say I? How's that possible? How could you not be the same person you were 5 years ago? Well, that's the point. 5 years ago, you were playing a different character. Right? In fact, the truth is that you might have played a number of characters in your life, and they might have already died, right? The character that you played in high school, you might have played the cool, hip high school kid, or you might have played the nerdy kid. But who says you're playing that anymore? See, that's why people have to go to therapy. Often therapy is the self has become trapped in a character that you're not playing anymore, right? Or you shouldn't be playing anymore, but you're still playing it. Are you following that? I'll give you an example. You know, children have this strange question they sometimes ask, and maybe you've asked this question. Did you ever ask, who would I have been if my mother would have married another man? Did you ever ask that kind of question, or could you understand that question? How many at least understand that question? Well, that's one point. That's a completely misunderstanding question. How can you understand that? What do you mean? Who would I have been if my mother would have married my man? I wouldn't have been if my mother would have married my... But no, I intuit that I am a self and that I could have played another character. That question is a powerful realization how the self transcends the character and is not synonymous with the character. You're following this. If I ask, who would I would have been if my mother would have married another man, that means that I could have entertained being born into a taller body, a blonde look. I might have spoken a different language. This, by the way, although there are different opinions in Judaism, but definitely the Arizal accepts and the Zohar accepts something called reincarnation. Reincarnation doesn't mean that David Aaron's coming back. It means that I could play another character in another life. And I might have played a different character in a previous life. Okay? So, my wife read an article where a woman was hypnotized to go to a previous life. Are you familiar with a book called Many Masters, Many Lives? A book by a guy named Brian Weiss, Jewish guy, who did a lot of research on past lives. I'm not encouraging anybody to go into your past life. I think it's a mistake. I think living your life this time around is hard enough, so forget about your past life, right? But beyond that, my wife did read an article about past lives. And there was a woman that was hypnotized to a previous life. Now, in a hypnotic note, in a hypnotic state, this woman began to describe in incredible detail the home, the family, and this little town in France, right? Which is pretty amazing, but what's really amazing is she described all this in French. The woman didn't know French. In a hypnotic trance, the woman started to speak French. Okay? I don't know. These are articles. You know, maybe somebody made it up. I don't really care if somebody made it up or not. The point being is, who are you? You are a soul, and you have come into this world to play a character. Okay? And the good news from all this is you are never going to die. You are never going to, now don't get me wrong, David Aaron is going to die. David Aaron is going to die, but I'm not David Aaron. I'm a soul, and I play David Aaron. And when David Aaron dies, I will either play another role or I'll go to a different theater, right? But I'm not going anywhere. Now, if you really believe this, you would stop the fear of death, which is a very big motivation that is destroying people's lives because they're so anxious about the end. But Judaism says that you as a soul are immortal, and you as a soul will never die. Now, I saw this when my mother died. I was by her bed as she was dying, and yet she was giving birth. It was incredible. She was deeply breathing like a woman giving birth. And she was taking these deep breaths. And then there was a moment where she just like a little bitterness in her mouth. She's gone. And my son told me that there's a Gemara that says that when a person leaves the world, the angel puts a little drop of bitterness on their tongue, and then they leave the world. I saw that. And I saw my mother give birth to her soul out of her body. I didn't see soul. But it was so clear. Where is she? Now she's here, now she's not. My mother was a body. So when people say, well, where did you bury your mother? I say, I didn't bury my mother. All right? My mother's alive and well. She's just, I can tell you where her body's being buried. But you don't bury souls. You're a soul, and you're playing a character. But here is the point that I want you to understand. What is the source of your self-worth? If it's your character, you're never going to be happy. If it's your incredible intelligence, you know that you won't have that forever. If it's your great looks, you know you won't have that forever. If it's your incredible talent, you know you won't be on the top of the charts forever. If your self-worth is based on your character, then you are basing your self-worth on that which is transient and not in your control. Do you follow this point? It's a very deep and very critical point. Because a lot of people, their self-worth is to build this character so much, and they don't realize that it has this double-edged sword, because you don't end up feeling better about yourself for long term. Okay? So a lot of people are walking dead men, because what they do is they think they are their intelligence, and their intelligence is them. And if they're not so intelligent, then they've lost their self. Right? They've lost their self. I'll give you an example. I had a student who was a professional basketball player in Europe. And the beginning of his spiritual journey was one day in a game, he went up for the shoot and came down on his ankle. And he seriously injured himself. And he was lying on the court in horrific pain. And they schlepped him off the court, and his coach, his star player, runs up and takes a look at this wound. And he says, Joe says, I know it's bad, but I'll do therapy. I'll be back in the game. And his coach said, Joe, I know this kind of injury. You're out of the game forever. So he died that day, because he was no longer a basketball player. His entire identity was basketball. All his friends were basketball players, right? His clothing was basketball themes. His furniture, his whole life was basketball. And within minutes, he was no longer a basketball player. Now, what do you do when your whole identity, your whole self-worth is basketball, and now you can't play basketball? Well, so some people turn to drugs, and some people just get depressed. Some people might even kill themselves. And he decided, I guess I'm not a basketball player. I must be more than that. And so that's why he came to Israel and decided to do one of our summer programs, to find out, well, who am I? What is the spiritual meaning of my life? Right? Now what's really funny is he's a rabbi. Right? He's a rabbi. So, it's pathetic. No, I'm just joking. Right. So, what's his name? What? I don't think he'd want us to. Right. Okay, so you're a soul. And you've come into this world to play a character, just like an actor plays a character. Now imagine an actor gets a part in a film, and as he's going through the script, he sees that in scene 9, he's going to die. He freaks. Why not? I'm going to die. I don't want to die. I mean, I don't want to die. I mean, I want to act. I want to keep acting. So he runs up to the director and the producer, excuse me, I there's something wrong. I mean, you got the wrong guy, because I'm not going to die. The director says, excuse me, what are you talking about? He says, well, I see right here that in scene 9, I'm going to die. And the director says, you're not going to die, right? The character you're playing is going to die. You're going to get up, and you're going to win an Oscar for your death, right? And he goes, oh, no, I know it. I'm going to die. That's as crazy as taking death that seriously. Rav Kook has an article when he says, death is an illusion. You're not going to die. But if I say you, and you think Cook or John or Daniel, yeah, if that's who you are, then you are going to die. But that's not who you are. That's what you play, right? That's what you play. I'm talking about who were you before they gave you your name? Who were you before you were born? You were a soul. You didn't have a name. So if somebody says, what's your name? Corey, what's your name? Well, your real name is Soul, okay? Your real name is Soul, okay? Now that you've been born, what game did they give you, Soul? Right? But that's what you are. You're an neshama. You're not going to die. You have great attributes, but you're not your attributes. They're not you. They're a facet of you. They're an expression of you. But you're much greater than that. Okay? So let's hear some questions, Michael. Soul. Okay. I actually don't want to do that right now, but there is basically three things that could happen to you when you leave your character. One is you could go to Gan Eden, which the Ramchal talks about. You're in this stationary world waiting to come back for Tchias HaMetim. Another is that you go to Gehenna. Or another is that you come back to this world and play another character. Okay? So, it's kind of like, let's make a deal, like, you know, between, you know, what's behind door number one, door number two, door number three. So what determines which your mitzvahs, right? You see, what happens when a person, you know, our sources tell us that an evil person, when they die, leave this world like cotton being pulled out of a thorn bush. But a tzaddik, a holy person, when they die, it's like hair being pulled out of cream. What's the point? You see, a rush is a person who's become so identified and so invested in his character that he doesn't let go. He doesn't want to leave this world because if I'm not the most famous movie star in the world, then I'm nothing. And if I'm dying, I'm not going to be a movie star. So he can't let go because it's not that every movie star is a rush, chas v'shalom. I don't mean that, right? Although most of them are. No, I'm just joking. No, of course not. But the idea is how attached are you to your body, to your money, to your reputation? How attached are you? Because when you leave the world, you understand that these were all like your car. You love your car, you use your car, you get around with your car, but your car is not you. But some people, if their car gets scratched, they freak because the car has become themselves. It's become their sense of worth. It's become their whole identity. That's what identity is. What are you identifying with? What is the source of identification? So if you identify with that which is transient, then you are transient and you will live in a life of insecurity. I met a guy who was an extremely, extremely rich guy in Toronto. And I was hoping that he, you know, I could solicit him for a gift towards Israelite Naraita. So you got to see the building he's in and the office he's in. I get to the office. He's got this attractive receptionist, and he's got antique furniture, and he's got, you know, and he's wearing this three-piece suit that must have cost a couple $1,000s. I'm thinking to myself, wow, this guy, he's going to be supportive, you know? And so I'm sitting there, and he says, Rabbi, can I get you a coffee? I said, that's very nice of you, right? And he, under his table, he pushes a button, right? And this, right away, this attractive receptionist shows up. She says, yes, sir. He says, two coffees, please. She says, yes, sir. She comes back, you know, and she pours the water. And she says, sir, shall I put your sugar? He says, yes, thank you. Right? She says, that's two teaspoons. He says, yes, thank you. Shall I stir it for you, Sue? He says, yes, thank you. And I'm thinking, my God, this guy's got it made. Look at this guy. She turns to me. She says, can I put your sugar in? He says, oh, no, thank you. She says, can I stir it? I said, no, I can do that myself. You know. So he says, okay. So I'm thinking, this is great. So I tell him about what we're doing, and his son was in our programs, and, you know, what we've done for his son. And he says to me, Rabbi, don't let all this fool you. No, don't let all this fool you. No, no, no. He says, I live with fear every day. You know, Rabbi, I could lose this any moment. I could lose this any moment. So I'm sorry, but I've got to be careful about my future. And so so he gave me an $18 check. Right? So I wrote him a $180 check. I felt bad for the guy. He was poverty stricken. Because even though he had all this, his whole identity was invested in all this. And he lived with the fear that he would lose it any moment. Right? That's why it's so strange. Why do they call these securities? They're insecurities. Right? Bonds and securities, money securities. It's not securities. These are the most insecure people I've met. You know, I have met very famous actors, actresses. I want you to know, a lot of them are incredibly insecure. Incredibly insecure. I remember one actor said to me that he's been in therapy for years and he just stopped because he realized that you're never going to graduate. Right? And he was just taking pills for depression. Right? You have to understand, if you don't get in touch with your neshama, because this is the driver, this is the car, and don't get them confused. We're not against your talents, we're not against your money, we're not against your body, but don't confuse them that this is who you are. The same thing with your story. You all have a story, but your story is not you. It might have been the story you were playing when you were in public school or in high school, right? You might have been the kid that was a nerd and everybody picked on you, but you're not that kid anymore. So why do you keep living the story? Those are people who are stuck in their character and have made the mistake to think that me is self and me is not self. And that's the power of all the avot. What make the avot so great? Is they transcended their characters. Avram Avinu is kindness. What's his story about? A man who was able to transcend kindness. He was able to be judging and harsh when it was the right time. It's not so kind to leave your father, but he had to do it. It's not so kind to tell Lot to go away, but he had to do it. And it's certainly not kind to almost sacrifice your son. For a man of kindness, he was being asked to transcend his natural character traits. Okay? Yitzchak was gvura, power. But look at his life. He doesn't come across so powerful. Yaakov is emes. But look at his life. It revolves around deception and lies. Because if your character trait is emes, and you cannot but tell the truth, and the Nazis knock on your door and say, is your dad here? Well, I cannot tell a lie. No, no. Transcend your character and tell a lie. Okay? So we will all be asked at certain times to act out a character. And that will be a moment for you to remember that you're a soul and your character is not who you are. Right? Again, there's nothing wrong with your character as long as you don't become a slave to your character. There's nothing wrong with your story. And I encourage you all to write your story. Because in your story, you are telling yourself and other people who you think you are. And you might have outgrown that story. Or you might have misunderstood the details and have created a story that isn't even your story. But to do that, you got to be a soul. And that's the therapy of Judaism. The therapy of Judaism is constantly being anchored in the pure self and not being a slave to anyone, not even to your character. So I see there's a lot of... Yeah, Daniel.
The self is just pure awareness and raw experience and has no expressible properties. What distinguishes one soul from another?
Well, that's the same thing as what distinguishes seeing from hearing. Let's say you are seeing and I am hearing. These are both colors of awareness, but they're very different. So we're all different colors of awareness. But as I mentioned, we can't describe seeing, right? And we can't describe hearing, but they're clearly different. And so too, you and I are clearly different. You're a different kind of awareness, and I'm a different kind of awareness. And the things that you're aware of, just like seeing is aware of colors and texture, and it's not aware of sound, right? And sound is aware, and hearing is aware of sound, but it's not aware of shapes. So too, you're a certain kind of awareness, which is aware of certain things that I'm not aware of, but we're completely different. Okay, that's going to get us into the question of, well, what's the difference between a Jewish soul and a not Jewish soul? It's the same question, what's the difference between you and me, right? The difference is that we are different kinds of awareness, okay? And so if we looked at seeing, hearing, tasting, you know, touching as the different colors of the spectrum of awareness, so there's white light and then there's the spectrum of the colors of the white light. There is pure white consciousness, and then there's the colors of that consciousness, and each and every one of us is a different color of consciousness, which then becomes embodied in, expressed through a character. And you've been given your character. For instance, the Gemara says that it has a lot to, the Gemara in Shabbat talks about astrology. And it says that if a person was born at the time of Mars, then they will have a bloodthirsty character. You're born with your character, okay? But what is your free choice? What are you going to do with your character? Are you going to become a serial murderer? Or are you going to become a surgeon? There's nothing wrong with being bloodthirsty. The question is, what do you do with it? And the way you direct it is by stepping away from it a little bit and saying, well, what am I going to do with this? It's like a tool. What are you going to do with it? There's nothing wrong with anybody in this room except for, no, there's nothing wrong with anybody in this room except for the fact that you might be a slave to a story that you have written or someone else has convinced you of, or characteristics that you are not directing but have become enslaved to. Okay? Enslaved to. But every single one of you has a power, and every single one of you has a problem. And it's all part of the character you came to this world to play. Now, we have a lot more to discuss here, okay? We haven't gotten to the I yet. But the first thing I want you to know is you are soul, you've come into this world, you've been dealt a deck of cards, the kind of parents you have, right? The kind of environment you were born in, okay? The level of intelligence that you have, the level of emotional intelligence that you have, all these are givens. And nobody gets better or worse. It's what you do with it, okay? It's really what you do with it. All right? Yeah, Ralph, you had a question. You're trying to fast forward. We're not there yet. We have to figure out the I. In the meantime, we're the self, okay? And the first thing I want you to get in touch with is you are a soul. And part of getting in touch with yourself as a soul is do this experiment or do this exercise, right? Sit and just be aware of physical sensations. Just do that right now. Let's just sit there, right? And just close your eyes. And just be aware, just purely aware. Aware of physical sensations. I want you to be aware of the feeling in your right toe. Can you feel your right toe? Now I want you to be aware of your left pinky. Now I want you to be aware of your back against the chair. And just be aware of tension in your body. Where is there tension in your body, stress in your body? Now just say to yourself, I have physical sensations, but physical sensations is not who I am. I have physical sensations, but I am not physical sensation. Now I want you to be aware of emotions. Just watch your emotions. Maybe you're feeling a little frustrated, maybe you're feeling angry. maybe feeling a little happy. Well, actually, I'm sure you're all feeling very happy in my class. Feeling happy. Maybe you're feeling a little, you know, a little stressed. I have emotions. Just repeat in your head, I have emotions, but I'm not my emotions. Now watch your thoughts. And just be aware of your thoughts. And there's so many thoughts. And just look at a thought and let it just kind of float by like a leaf on a river. And just watch your thoughts and realize I have thoughts, but I'm not my thoughts. So if I'm not my feelings and I'm not my emotions and I'm not my thoughts, who am I? I am who I am. And so if you would do this exercise every day, you begin to become aware of yourself as pure awareness. Right? And then you won't get so stuck in anger. Just watch the anger. See, the mistake that people make is they say, I am angry. Don't ever say you are angry, because then you become the anger. You can say, I feel angry. That's a healthy thing, because at least there's the anger and there's you. You are feeling angry. Then you can control it much better. Okay? You can say, don't ever say I'm sad, I'm depressed. You'll become it. Your language will convince yourself to become your depression. You can say I feel sad, and look at that sadness. Have you ever experienced losing your temper and yelling at somebody, but something about you that's watching you yell and feeling stupid? Have you ever heard yourself yelling? You are yelling, you're in the yell, and yet there's something about you observing the yell, and there's like a little voice saying, I look really stupid, why am I doing this? I'm going to really regret this. Have you ever experienced that strange feeling where you're in the emotion and you're also watching the emotion? Have you ever felt really sad? You might even be crying. And yet, as much as you're in the crying, there's you kind of watching yourself crying and even saying, but I'm going to be okay. I'm going to get through this. I remember when one of my children was diagnosed with a sickness that was very, very, very scary. And I burst into tears. And I was just sobbing. And yet there was something about me that was beyond that moment. And I heard myself say to me, we're going to be okay. We're going to get through this. That soul, when you can start operating from that place, you will be powerful, right? And there's so much to say about this. It has to do a lot with marriage. Most people have married their personality partner rather than their soulmate. And they're stuck because they start to think, I am my personality is me, but I'm much more than my personality, right? I'm a soul. So that's, I would say, one of the most important points of a Torah life is how to help you be soulful, be more aware. And the getting out of Egypt is the theme of all of Judaism, because the theme of all of Judaism is to refuse to be a slave even to the me, even to the character. So going back to how we started, this woman was in Japan looking for herself. What does that mean? Well, one of the things it means is this woman is lost in her character. She doesn't know who she is anymore. She's so trapped in her character. She feels so alienated from her inner self. And that's a terrible feeling of lost. I met a billionaire, and we were walking, and I was intrigued. The guy owns a private jet. He's very well known. If I tell you his name, you'll know who he is. Private jet, goes all over the world. He goes to more countries than I walk blocks in Israel in a day. He's just, you know, he's one of those powerful people, business-wise, politically. So I was walking with the fellow. I said, tell me, what's your life like? And he stops in his tracks and he looks at me and he says, Rabbi, I am lonely. And I was shocked. I don't know this guy so well. I just met him. And that's a very vulnerable and very personal thing to share. I am lonely. So, and I'm thinking, the guy's never alone. And I said, lonely? He says, Rabbi, I know that if I were to lose all my money tomorrow, Nobody would give me the time of day. This is a man who's lost in his character. He has confused his network with his self-worth. And don't ever do that. Right? Don't ever do that. That's why Shabbat is a day to get back to soul. Right? Because on Shabbat, there isn't a rich man, there isn't a poor man. It's a day to go away. Stop playing your character. All week long, you play your characters. Remember, hey, you're a soul. You're an actor, right? Which famous actor got lost in his character and took his life? Heath Ledger. He actually started to think he was Superman, right?
Joker.
I was just testing your trivia. Right? He actually started to think he was the Joker. And so he got lost in his character. So I shared this idea with the actor Kirk Douglas, and he told me, they teach you this in acting school. I said, yeah. He says, this is what they teach you in acting school. A good actor never gets lost in his character. He never lets his character become who he is. He has to be in his character and outside his character simultaneously. Right? So he said, he, for instance, always was casted as this tough guy, macho guy. And he didn't like that because that meant he wasn't a great actor. So he heard that there was auditions for a movie called Lust for Life, which was the story of Vincent van Gogh, a struggling, sensitive artist. And he so much wanted to be able to play that because he wanted to be able to play out of character. Because until now, he'd been so typecasted as the cowboy, the criminal, right? The warrior. And so he auditioned and he got the part. Well, when the news hit Hollywood, he gets a call from his friend, John Wayne. I don't know if you're familiar with these actors. And John Wayne had played a couple of movies with Kirk Douglas. And he calls up Kirk and says, Kirk, what's this I hear about you? You took a sissy part like Vincent van Gogh? What's a cowboy like you doing taking a sissy part like this? And Kirk said to John, we're not cowboys. We're actors. And Kirk said, and that's why John Wayne was not a good actor. Because he became a cowboy. He could only play a cowboy. But a true actor can play any part. When they asked Peter Sellers, which part did you most identify with? And he said, none of them and all of them. That's a great actor. An actor can completely play his part. Nobody's saying forget about your part. You've been given a part. But don't let your part become the whole you. It's just a part of you. It's not the whole you. You're beyond that. And so there are times in your life that Hashem will ask you to do something that's so out of character, and that's a moment for you to demonstrate to yourself, hey, I'm a soul. Right? I play David Aaron. But David Aaron is not who I am. I'm much more than that. Any more questions? Yeah.
So what you're saying is that everybody has a soul, right?
No. You don't have a soul.
Everybody is a soul, sorry.
Yes.
So that means there's a fixed number of souls.
Ah, is there fixed numbers of souls? It's going to get a little more complicated, okay? Because souls can actually branch out. Just like when the soul enters into the body, then when it goes through the eyes, it sees. When it goes through the ears, it hears. And so different facets of the soul become more and more manifest. So therefore, there's a collective soul, and that collective soul becomes kind of like a tree growing. Like it all came out of this root. So that you can actually have more and more souls that are being born out of other souls. But there is this kind of evolution of consciousness, which we're going to talk about. Yeah.
Your soul is just like a form of
no, not your soul. You don't have a soul.
You as a soul.
Yes, that I soul. Just get used to it. I soul.
Soul are like a form of awareness, and that all your character traits and everything that you typically think of as composing an individual are just like a product of how you were born and
No, you're kind of belittling it. It's not just a product. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave you a character to play. If you were born at the time of Mars, then there's a reason why you were born at the time of Mars, because Hashem wants you to play a bloodthirsty character. I believe Hashem wants me to play a rabbi, right? I was born with the ability to speak in public. I have no problem speaking in public. I have more problems speaking in private, right? As I mentioned to you, I'm an extrovert on stage. I'm an introvert off stage. I'm a very quiet guy, okay? I'm a terrible conversationalist. At a Shabbos table, I won't say almost anything. Right? Unless somebody asks me a question, I say it's Dvar Torah. But basically, I'm a quiet guy. But on the other hand, I've been given the power to speak publicly, right? Now, most people don't have that. The number one fear in America is public speaking. The number two fear in America is death. Right? That means that if you've been asked to give a eulogy, you'd rather be in that box. Right? That's Jerry Seinfeld. Okay? So I don't have that problem. I was given the power to speak publicly. I'm not haughty about that because I did nothing for it. For me to be haughty about that would be as stupid as me being haughty over my ability to scratch my ear. Did you see that? Yeah. Been working on that. Real. Yeah. And then I got to this one. Whoa, that was a whole other thing. You know, like, of course you can, you know, you've been given, you've all been given talents. You've all been given problems, right? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave that to you. And we haven't explained why yet. But the only way you're going to really actualize the powers and the constellation of powers and problems you'd be given is to operate from a place of soul. That's what you have to do, okay? So now I had a choice. What am I going to do with the gift of gab? I could have done a lot of things. I could have gone into acting. I wanted to go into acting. Kirk Douglas actually said to me, you would have been a great actor. You could have been an actor. I'm so thankful I didn't go into acting, right? I'm not saying nobody should go into acting. I'm just saying, me personally, you know, I wanted to take this power and do something really meaningful. I wanted to do something that was really an expression of soulfulness. That's what you have to ask yourself. Hashem has given you all powers. He's given you all challenges. And now, get in the seat of soul, look at those powers, look at those challenges, look at those problems, and ask yourself, what can you do with that will bring goodness to the world? Right? And that will be your source of self-worth. It will be your service. So we will continue this tomorrow. Thank you very much. Are we doing